Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of HR Happy Hour is sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions so powerful they should wear tights and a cape. We enable and streamline organizational charting, succession planning, workforce modeling, and strategic workforce initiatives. Visit Acquire CEO Lois Melbourne's blog at blog.acquire.com for her enlightening insight into current HR industry issues by way of Star Trek, The Fonz, and Ebenezer Scrooge.
Welcome, everyone. It's HR Happy Hour. Welcome to the show. My name is Steve Bowes. Joining me, of course, Shauna Morkey, the HR Minion. Shauna, how are you today?
Hi. I'm doing great. That was an awesome intro.
You like that? Yeah, I just obviously, for folks who are listening, who have heard that, fans of the show, longtime listeners, might have thought, what is that playing at the beginning of the show? But we're really pleased to announce tonight, and hopefully going forward for a long time, our first real official show sponsorship from our friends at Acquire Software and our great friend and supporter of the show, Lois Melbourne, who's really been with us since just about the beginning. And
really?
Yeah, we're really pleased that Acquire Software is behind the show in such a positive and strong way. So we're really pleased and thankful to Lois and everyone at Acquire Software. So thank you to those guys, and look for more sort of
HR
Happy Hour and Acquire things coming up soon. So that was that, and so welcome to the show. It's episode 49. Tonight's show.
Wow.
We're a year into this. Our show tonight is called The Why of Work. We have a great guest who we're going to bring on in just 1 second. A couple of quick announcements. Our call-in number for tonight, if you want to call in and get involved and please, if you're interested in getting into the conversation tonight, I'd say call in soon. The lines are already starting to fill up, but our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on board and ask a question or make a comment during the show, and we will try to take a few calls and questions during the course of the show. If you're hanging out on Twitter tonight, and I know lots of you are already, we have a hashtag. Our hashtag, of course, is HR Happy Hour. Shauna will do her best, as well as myself, to keep an eye on all the tweets. We'll try. Yeah, I know there'll be a lot of them tonight. Folks are really excited about the show, and you should be. I'm excited too. We're really pleased tonight to welcome a really special guest to the show. Our guest tonight is a professor of business at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. He's the co-founder of the RBL Group. He's the author, Shauna, of 23 books. That's a lot.
Wow.
Amazing. 23
That's
books
insane.
On HR, leadership, organizational issues. We're really pleased to welcome him. Please welcome to the HR Happy Hour, Professor Dave Ulrich. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey. Hi, Shauna. Hi, Steve. I am delighted to be on your show. What a privilege for me.
I'll tell you, well, we're really pleased to have you on the show, and I do.
Most definitely.
Yeah, I'm so excited. You know, Sean is a very active HR blogger, as am I, Dave. And, you know, as bloggers, and lots of the folks listening to the show are in the blog community, and we get lots of emails, you know, talking about from public relations folks and asking us to, you know, are we interested in looking at books and reading them and reviewing them. And so when I got an email asking me if I was I interested in looking at The Why of Work, your latest book, which we're going to be talking about tonight, I said, absolutely. I'd love to look at it. I'd love to read it. And then immediately I asked the PR rep out of nowhere, well, can Dave come on the show? You know, let's
really?
Bring him on. And so we're really pleased through that exchange and some real great support from your PR folks as well that we could arrange your appearance on the show tonight. So we're really happy about that.
Well, you're very kind. We have a great PR person. Mark Fortier is just superb. We're lucky to have him, and we're grateful that those are blogging about it. The book formally came out on Monday this week, and we hear that sales are already beginning to do well. So
yeah,
that is, for us,
fantastic.
Exceptionally good news.
Yeah,
great
that's
news.
Great. And
very
and
cool.
One thing, Dave, I don't want to pat ourselves on the back a little bit, but we learned this last week. This show can move books. We can do it. We had an author on last week, and during the show, someone reported back that all the books on Amazon were sold out, apparently. So we're
whoa.
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, we'll
that.
Try and do the same for you.
Now you've set a standard that will be almost impossible to meet. Well, yeah. It's interesting. Writing a book is an inherently private process. Wendy, my wife and I, who's a very good psychologist, wrote this, and it really came out of a whole lot of walking, and then all of a sudden you walk, you talk, you think, you put words down, and then all of a sudden it comes out, and this private stuff is out in public. And you're really scared because it's like somebody looking at your baby and saying, geez, your baby's ugly, and you don't want that. So anyway, we're excited about this book. It's a book we feel some passion about and think the book, we hope the timing is right.
Yeah, let's talk about the book a little bit. Again, for those just joining in, we're with Dave Ulrich, co-author along with Wendy Ulrich of The Why of Work, the new book, subtitled How Great Leaders Build Abundant Organizations That Win. I have read the book. You know, I didn't just get my free copy. I actually read it.
That's the point.
I did, and I really enjoyed it. So, Dave, I'll just start off with, you know, what was your and Wendy's motivation for writing the book in the first place?
Pure greed. No,
greed.
I
love it.
That was a joke. It
nice.
Has nothing to do. In fact, it's 100% the opposite. Wendy and I, we've been together a long time. We've been together 34 years. We're good friends. She is a psychologist who writes about how do people heal and how do you go through the emotional issues of healing, especially around bringing meaning and purpose into that healing process. And I study organizations. I'm consumed with them. That's what I like to do. Wendy has told me I have OCD, which in psychology is obsessive compulsive disorder, but for me it's organization compulsive disorder. I just like to look at organizations. In fact, some people have said you're not fun to go to dinner with because you'll have the maitre d' over and the owner over and you'll redesign the flow of their restaurant before the hors d'oeuvres are served. And so we got together and we started to say, so where is common interest? And what we discovered, and we won't bore you with statistics, but they're kind of bleak, that coming out of an economic recession, a lot of people have an emotional recession. And Judy Bardwick talks about the psychological recession, and it shows up in a lot of data. The highest area of increasing healthcare costs is mental health. In the military, mental health issues are huge. The indexes on employee engagement and commitment are atrocious, that there is a sense of a need for meaning and purpose in our lives. B, organizations are a critical place to find it. You can find it at work, you can find it at home, you can find it at friends, with hobbies, with church groups. In fact, one piece of evidence, there's a book that came out a while ago called Purpose Driven Life, and I've lost the author. Rick Warren.
Rick Warren, yeah.
And that book sold 30 million copies. I mean,
wow.
It just – and what it says is there seems to be a crying need for people to find purpose. Well, Wendy and I concluded organizations are an incredible place where that should occur. We spend thousands of hours a year there, if not physically, emotionally. And if you can find it at work, something happens. Then C, we discuss. So A, there's a need for meaning. B, organizations are the place. C, when we got into the research, what we discovered was organizations where there's a sense of meaning make money. And making meaning makes sense, C-E-N-T-S, and sense, S-E-N-S-E.
Right.
Companies that make meaning are going to have better productivity. This is one of those great win-wins. And that's what kind of drove us to write the book. How do we help leaders in an organization discover how they can create meaning and purpose for those they lead?
Right, and Dave, you make a really concerted effort in the book that the book's focused on leaders, and you're targeting your message to leadership in organizations, and just maybe talk a little bit about why you decided to orient the book and target the book at leadership rather than sort of a general, almost kind of more of a general self-help style book for the general population.
Boy, we really struggled with it. And so the premise is we want to write a book that will have a lasting impact in organizations. Option one, we write a self-help book. And there are some great books out there. The Seven Habits a few years ago was phenomenal. right now there's two books, that, and there's more than that, and I'm going to be embarrassed because there will be other people mad I didn't mention them, but Daniel Pink's book on Drive,
right.
Marshall Goldsmith's book on Mojo. They've probably both been on this show, and they're on many others.
Those are really we booked you first, Dave, but we'll get them.
By the way, let's get better every time because they're going to do a phenomenal job. They're
right.
exceptional, and they're really good at the personal level. And then there's some great books on organizations. There's some the purpose-driven organization books or Jim Collins's work and on how do you make sure the organization has purpose. Rosabeth Kanter has a new book out that is just wonderful on Supercore. Linda Groton of the UK is just superb around glow and teamwork. And so Wendy and I said, so if you look at the individual, you look at the organization, what's the intersection? And if you draw two circles that overlap, the intersection is leaders. What is it a leader can do that will help himself or herself, but also help the individual and also help the organization? And so we decided to take some principles, and we could apply them to the individual. We could apply them to the organization, but let's make leaders accountable for it. And the other thing is leaders seem to make a difference, that in an organization, when you have leaders who build this meaning-making capacity, they will make a huge difference in their organization.
Dave, well, I think those are great points, and I like the fact that you've expected as well that Marshall Goldsmith and Dan Pink have been on the show, but we'll get them. Absolutely, we will.
I would love it if we could get Dan Pink. That would be so cool.
Sean, that's your job for the next couple of weeks. We'll get that order.
Okay.
Let's
use me as a referral, and it probably won't help. So
Dave, I do have to say.
Yeah. They are both outstanding colleagues, and they write great stuff. I mean, their stuff. Marshall, I was gracious enough to write a foreword to our books. These guys do great work, and we just wanted to focus more on leaders. One of the reasons is, and it's interesting, you write a book and then you figure out what you were writing about. In 2004, a TV show came out that we've all seen that is great entertainment, and it's called The Apprentice. We've all seen it, we've seen versions of it. The premise of The Apprentice is entertainment is terrific. As a leadership theory, it's atrocious. Because the notion of The Apprentice is you bring in 24 people, they do some exercises, there's a winner and a bunch of losers. And at the end of the ultimate final show, one person is hired and 23 people have been fired. And there's one winner who now goes on the other side of the table and gets to fire people. What a terrible leadership style. In fact, I would argue it's kind of what got us into the recession. It's a sense of arrogance. It's a sense of entitlement. It's a sense of privilege. It's a sense of I'm right, everybody else is wrong, and not being sensitive. There was a TV show came out, excuse me, after the Super Bowl in 2010. It was called Undercover Boss. I happened to stumble on it. And anybody who's seen an episode, the premise is so nice. The leader goes undercover, so the head of 7-Eleven or waste management assumes an identity of a new employee. Now, it's hard to hide it when you're 50 years old, but they grow a scruffy beard, they grow their hair long, they dress poorly.
Right.
And their task...
The disguise was don't shave for 3 days and put on a hat, right? That was pretty much it.
Yeah. And then spit twice.
Right.
But what their premise is, I want to find out what drives my employees at the front line. And so one of the episodes, and I happened to catch it, was the head of 7-Eleven goes into a 7-Eleven store where they're selling 2,500 cups of coffee a day, highest in their system. And he works as a new employee making coffee. What he discovers is there's an employee who's worked there for 18 years named Dolores, who's in her mid-60s. They don't sell coffee. In fact, his line is, we don't sell coffee, we sell relationships. We've been able to create in this store with this employee a sense of meaning. And she shakes hands with 2,500 customers a day who know her by name and spend time with her. When the undercover boss is done, after a week of being undercover, he goes in front of his employees, usually at staff, corporate, there's hundreds of or 1,000 employees, and he says, I went undercover. I discovered what gave our employees purpose and meaning. And my job is to now build that across the company. At the end of The Apprentice, one person standing, 23 have failed. At the end of The Undercover Boss, all 1,000 people stand up and applaud. There's the organization of the future. How do we engage not just the hands and the feet and the minds, but the hearts and souls of 1,000 employees. That's what we wrote our book to do, and to try to give you the rationale for why that happens.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Dave, thanks. Quickly, we need to do a quick show reset for folks who are listening and who are hanging out with us tonight. This is the HR Happy Hour. We're talking about the why of work with author Dave Ulrich. It is a great new book all about meaning and how to build more abundant organizations. So Dave's with us tonight. Our call-in number for the show is 646-378-1086. Please press 1 after you connect, and we will, I promise, take a couple of calls before the show is over. For Dave, and we'll talk a little bit about meaning and the book and really whatever else is on your mind. Dave, there's some folks out there not as big fans of Dan Pink, apparently, and so I've got a couple of mentions on Twitter about that, so perhaps we definitely have to book him and let the folks who might have some comments for him have their say later on in the year.
So, yeah, any author that will put together a career advice book using manga and has my vote as being cool. I love him.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I think we should do it. We're going to work on that. So, Dave, I want to talk a little bit about some of the issues, some of the external factors that may sort of affect organizations that may make this pursuit of more meaningful workplaces and more abundant organizations even more important perhaps than they would have been in the past. Things like the recession or perhaps some of the environmental problems, obviously the BP problems and the oil spill. And BP I wanted to ask you about as well, because they're actually mentioned a couple of times in the book in passing. It sort of held up a little bit, but obviously the book was written before the oil spill, and I just thought maybe you might want to comment a little bit about external and environmental factors that might influence the organizations and leaders in the pursuit of meaning.
Absolutely. We have a little, and I'm not very smart, so I need acronyms to remember stuff. And so we call it STEPED, STEPED. It doesn't stand for much, but it's STEPED. Socially, what's happening in the world? The haves and the have-nots are getting greater. The lifestyle of people is changing. Socially, people need to be connected to each other. Where do they find the connection? And I mentioned it before. It could be a church. It could be a hobby. We happen to be at the time of the year when the World Cup is beginning, and you're going to see countries find meaning when their team wins. They'll run in the streets and scream and shout, and they'll be demoralized when they lose. Technology. Technology is a wonderful source of meaning, and you've been at the front edge of that with social contracting, social media, blogging, texting. The other thing to be careful of is sometimes technology may give you a false sense of meaning. Sometimes the blogs allow you to be candid without having consequence. And sometimes I think we can use blogs to reinforce relationships, but it's dangerous to form them simply through technology. My son got married a couple of years ago, and he said, "Dad, I need advice before I get married." And I said, "Son, I will give you advice." He said, "What is that?" And I said, "All you've done is text message your fiance. You spend most of your time texting. You need to find out how she smells." Now, I'm not salacious, but it's you need to be in the room with her. You need to be close to her. You need to find out what she's like. And he got married, and he came back 6 months and said, "Dad, you're right. We're together all the time." But technology can be a connecting device, and it needs to be a melding device, but it can't replace some of the intimacy that we need personally. STE, economic recession. The economic recession has forced people to go back to their core assumptions and what they believe. One of the things I mentioned that Judy Bardwick and others talk about is in an economic recession, we're finding a lot of people facing a psychological recession. In fact, I have the privilege of visiting lots of phenomenal companies. And one of the things leaders tell me often in private is, "I'm tired." There's a little bit of leadership fatigue. In fact, the mental image I had is that a lot of leaders have been playing for the last 2 years whack-a-mole.
Right.
You get on there, a crisis comes up, you hit it down. You got a customer crisis, you hit it down. You got a technology crisis. And they're now saying, "We're slowing that down. We're starting to get through some of that crisis. I'm tired, but I've got to look forward with some degree of hope." So the economic issue. Political. The political issues come and go. How do we manage this? I'm going to step in this one really bad. If I want to be a Democrat, I will listen to Fox News for 30 minutes and be so annoyed that I'll be a Democrat. Then if I want to be a Republican, I'll listen to MSNBC for 30 minutes. I'll get so annoyed, I'll become a Democrat or a Republican. What we have created is some political incivility, and there almost seems to be a game of hostility. Who can be the most hostile the most often? I personally believe that political incivility is a stifling our political progress. We have problems in every country in the world. How do we bring our differences to bear to a common solution? That's the political agenda going forward. I'll finish the last two real quick. Environmental.
Yeah.
We clearly face environmental issues. BP is a great case in point. What a tragedy for everybody. And our first inclination is to say, who's the scapegoat? Tony, the CEO, should be fired. Well, yeah, I like sports, and I'm not a great sportsman, but I like watching sports. I don't know if I've ever known a professional sports team that fired their coach mid-year that won the season. You say, Tony, we don't need a scapegoat. We need to fix the problem. And it will get fixed, and BP is working hard. I'm not going to be an apologist for BP. They've obviously done some things wrong. But I'd love to go back and say, how do we think longer term about this? What does this lesson say? So August, September, it will get solved. What can we learn from this about alternative sources of energy? What can we learn from this about safe energy drilling? We do need oil as consumption. How do we moderate the consumption so that we don't get into these problems? And how can we use a crisis as a source of learning and a source of progress rather than scapegoating? And finally, demographics. At two levels, and I'll go to both ends, in the U.S. today, in North America, 10,000 people a day will retire. It's a startling number. I just signed a great book by Keith Lawrence. That's an enormous number of people. The other data in that book scared me even more. The highest suicide rate of any demographic group are men 65 to 70.
Wow, that's amazing. I would have never guessed that.
Really?
Yeah, and the second highest are teenagers, 15 to 20, which I would have predicted, and they're 50% less than the 65-year-old men. When people retire, having had a life of meaning and purpose at work, and they leave to a life of inane nothingness at home, their depression goes up, their discouragement goes up, and they get into a vicious circle. So at the older end, there is a lack of meaning in retirement. Now, at the younger end, we're seeing the importance of meaning is all around us. The Harvard Business School last year, and there's a book just came out recently you'll probably have on your show called The MBA Oath.
Right.
I think it was 40% to 45% of the graduates of the Harvard MBA program signed an oath that they would do no harm to the world. They would work in companies that provide meaning and socially responsible jobs. 250 countries have a that's not right. 250 universities around the world in 12 months have adopted that. It's gone viral. I think we see in the next generation a passion for meaning. So, stepped, the social agenda for meaning. T, the technological need for connection that we don't isolate through social media. E, the economic need coming out of an economic recession to an emotional one. P, the political incivility getting overcome. E, the environmental demands to begin to think long-term about how do we care for an environment and have a triple bottom line, and D, the demographics all through the age cycle. Those are the pressures that we think begin to give us a sense of need for meaning.
Great. Dave, thanks. Thanks so much. That's really interesting stuff there, and I appreciate you going through that with us. Let's pause for 1 second. I'm just Shauna. Can you take a quick look out on our back channel, and if there's anything that you think we should mention or talk about, please let us know. And I know there's a lot of folks out there listening tonight and are really excited about the show and are tweeting and commenting as well. So what ends up happening, Dave, during the show is oftentimes there's a whole separate show that goes on with the fans
really?
That are listening out on Twitter and the listeners, and it's interesting sometimes to watch their discussions and dialogue as they sort of take some of the topics and go off in different directions. It's kind of fun. So
yeah, the leadership
I would love to hear what they're saying, so I'd find out if we're even close and what we believe. We may be off.
Yeah, there's been some good comments about that. We have some comments about University of Michigan and how they won the national championship in basketball after firing their coach right before the tournament. Sort of as an interesting comparison to the BP situation, I suppose. And Let's see if there's anything else. Well, Shauna, you can keep an eye on that for us. And
yeah.
If there's anything we want to bring up, we will. Again, the number with Dave Ulrich tonight, talking about the why of work on the HR Happy Hour, sponsored by our friends at Acquire Software. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. There are loads of people on the line. Please, if you want to come on, just go ahead and press 1. If you want to come on and make a comment or ask a question, I promise we'll take some calls before the show's over. Dave, I want to move ahead a little bit and talk a little bit more about the book as the book sort of unfolds and we've made the case and described meaning in abundant organizations and what that means and why that's important to organizations. You bring up, you really frame the book really, and the bulk of the book talks about the 7 questions, which you and Wendy framed as the 7 key questions to consider when you're thinking about meaning and abundance in organizations. And I know we probably don't have time to talk about each one in detail, but I'd like to just go through the 7 questions as they sort of really build the framework of the book and the ideas, and maybe just talk a little bit about each one really quick, so if that's all right with you.
Sure, I will.
Great.
Go
ahead, Dave.
No, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you.
I was just going to say, the first question that really gets us going is question number 1 is, what am I known for, or an identity question? And just maybe comment a little bit about how understanding what you're known for and how important that is.
Sure. Let me just give 30 seconds of context. Wendy and I said, okay, meaning matters. You got to find it. Work's a setting. How do we understand this? We went to the research. We're not smart enough to think we're going to create something nobody's ever thought about. So we looked at psychology and sociology. We looked at high-performing teams, the engagement literature. We looked at a lot of things. And when we synthesized that, we said there seem to be 7 questions that leaders can ask. One is, what am I known for? What is my identity? That comes out of some wonderful work in psychology by Martin Seligman, the father of positive psychology. And he says, if you can identify your strengths and build on them, you will begin to find more meaning and purpose in your life. Well, let's bring that into work. What are the strengths that somebody has, and how do I as a leader recognize those strengths and then build on them and build around them the work setting so that they can do their job better? Somebody may have a particular strength in social relationships. I have not ever met Shauna, but I get a sense that she has a great gift of social interaction, social skills.
Oh, she does.
Lamb.
Very true.
Does. And she's got humility with it. And others may have a gift of technological skills or creativity skills. How do we help people know their strengths? Now, the second part of the strengths work that I think gets missed by those who study this is Seligman was very clear. Build on your strengths that will strengthen others. That if you work on strengths that are not in the pursuit of serving somebody else, they won't be sustainable. So a leader comes to an organization and says, what are the set of strengths you have? How can we match you to the job that has those strengths, those requirements? And how do you use then those strengths to serve the company? Does the organization collectively take those strengths and build a stronger set of what we call organizational capabilities? The capability of a company then are the collective individual strengths of people. Walmart has the capability of managing costs. They're just very good at price and cost, and they're disciplined around that. They have individuals who have an independent predisposition to that, but they come together and make that into an organizational capability. And that's what the leader's challenge is, matching the individual and the organization around what you're known for and what those strengths are.
Right, right. Now, Dave, do you think organizations perhaps don't spend enough time on trying to understand what the strengths are of the people that they've got, and rather are really just focusing on, I've got this job or this role, and it needs to be able to accomplish A, B, and C, and I'm just going to find someone who can meet those objectives, otherwise they're out and move on to the next person?
I think organizations are getting smarter, but they still do it. It's the old joke is, we have a cloudy mirror test. Put a mirror up, and if it clouds over, you're hired. Organizations are getting smarter today. They're saying, let's be more rigorous, let's be more thoughtful about some of the things that need to go on so that we can serve people in a better way. You see that, for example, a sports team won't hire one of these high-priced professional athletes without all kinds of tests, physical tests, emotional tests, psychological tests, intellectual tests. And the match is very intense. Now, not all jobs are going to deserve that kind of attention. But we ought to be, leaders need to be very careful about getting the right person into the company. Peter Drucker, the godfather of all of our management field, said, the most critical decision a leader will ever make is who they hire, and the success rate is about 30%. And he said, if you could get that success rate to 35 or 40%, your probability of a successful venture is going to go up dramatically.
Right. It's more than just a 5% improvement in ultimate results. It's probably a 50% improvement, right, in results, just that small increase
no
in efficiency.
Question.
Yeah.
No.
Dave, let's talk about a little bit about some of the other questions that you guys identified. How about the next one, where am I going, that talks about purpose and motivation?
This is some of Daniel Pink's work that it sounds like some of your Twitter people love and some
don't.
I have one.
I've got one guy out there who likes to cause trouble. We'll ignore him for now.
Oh,
I said his name.
We do still love you, Paul. Don't worry.
As long as we're open-minded, let's learn from each other. But the drive is what motivates me. What gives me my motivation? We came up with, again, we're trying to be, my research 30 years ago at the university was numerical taxonomy, and I should pay any of your Twitter people $10 if they know what it is.
Numerical taxonomy. Yeah, no one listening to the show will know that.
Know it. What it is trying to take complex systems and find simple patterns. It's out of biology, the taxonomy, the pattern of species, and numerical is do it in a mathematical way. So we looked at the things that drive people, and we came up with four. Are you driven by insight? Are you motivated by learning and fresh insight and new ideas? Are you driven by achievement, accomplishment, getting goals met? Are you driven by relationships, connection, or are you driven by empowerment? And what we said, when we understand as a leader what drives people, what motivates them, you can then begin to build the organizational alternatives that help them be successful. Some organizations obviously are going to be driven by insight, research institutions, and they're going to need to manage their talent, their systems, their processes in a different way than a real estate organization that's driven purely by achievement. And being able to get a sense of that will help you as a leader figure out what drives the people I'm working with. And learning what drives them will help you begin to get the competency set to help them do their job going forward. And that's what we begin to get in some of that work on what is the purpose, what drives you. Now, it also applies at an organization. Does our organization have an inspiring purpose that captures not just your hands and your feet, but your hearts and souls? And can you create an organization? That's kind of the empowerment one. The example we use, and a lot of us, and again, we don't watch that much TV, but it's going to sound like we do. Sunday Night Television America is the show where they rebuild a home, and I've lost the name of it right
now. Yeah. Shauna, which one is that?
Home Makeover. Extreme Home Makeover.
Home Makeover, right,
yeah.
Exactly.
And they go in and they... And they take a family who's been disadvantaged for whatever unfortunate reason, and in a one-week period of time, come together as a community, rebuild a home, and they come home to this great home. I watch it, and I still cry half the time. And I feel, what a great life that is. Say, how can you bring that into a company? And I'll give an example. I was at John Deere recently, farm equipment. And you think of, you know, this is kind of a dowdy company, but they've been very successful. New CEO a couple of months ago stands up and he says to his top 150, 200 people, ladies and gentlemen, what a privilege to work with this company. And I think here we go again. But then he says the following. The world's population will double in the next 30 years. The land available for farming and producing food will stay at 15%. That's what we know and that's what the predictions are. Ladies and gentlemen of John Deere, in the next 30 years, we must double the productivity of that land through our equipment, through our science, and through our energy. If not, people won't eat.
Right.
We have a purpose. And you kind of get that tingly feeling. You go, oh, my goodness, I'm not just building a tractor that will get through the mud. I'm trying to find a way to get productivity out of a sacred spot of land so that we can feed a world that's growing, especially in third world markets. It's that kind of passion that captures not just the hands and the feet, but the heart and the soul.
Right,
and
right.
Leaders who purpose make that happen.
Right. So you're inspiring by connecting the day-to-day operations of assembling tractor parts and processing the logistics and all the complexities associated with manufacturing equipment. It's not just manufacturing a piece of equipment. It's doing your part to make sure that someone's going to have enough to eat somewhere down the road. That makes a lot of sense.
One of the exercises we did, in teaching a course recently to a great financial service firm in Canada, say, what's a business challenge you're wrestling with? And everybody wrote one down. I'm working on the platform for the technology for the company. I'm working at this product design. I'm working at managing our risk quotient in this financial services firm. Great, great company. Then we said, two-word question, so that what? What's the so that? And the so that shouldn't just be so that we make money. You got to get to a higher order. So that we make money, so what? So that people will have homes, so that people will get loans, so that we'll service those loans more efficiently, so that people can better pay them off. And suddenly with two or three so that questions, you take what would be an activity into a cause. And you take something that would be emotion or what you do into something that's imbued with emotion and how you feel. That's what leaders do with the why of work. And it's not doing the day-to-day work, and it's not having discipline and rigor about making money. Money is critical. But it's doing that in such a way that it gets the heart into the game.
Right. Now, we didn't really talk about that at the beginning of the show, and I wanted to ask it really quickly. So I'll ask it again a little more directly. Is that a difficult, Dave, difficult sell for you to make when you're talking to organizations and to leaders to draw that line between meaning and abundance and effectiveness in terms of sales, profits, productivity? Or do people sort of, once you explain what you're talking about, do they fundamentally know that to be true already? Or is that a difficult sell?
I was interviewed recently, and I won't name the show. It was a live television show, and the first question a business person asked is, you've written a book about how to get people to be more productive by paying them less. I run a financial services firm. How can I cut the bonuses in half and get my people to work harder?
Oh, nice.
I was startled, and the answer is, don't. I mean, that's just, what a stupid question. You're trying to ambush me. And by the way, the person that was doing the interview, he's never going to get it. He looks at Michael Douglas in Wall Street 20 years ago, 1988, Gordon Greco, and he's probably got his poster on his wall and wakes up to it. I mean, greed is good.
That's a poster.
Now I feel better about it because I'm ambushing him back, which is very unfair. But the point is, when you sit with a leader, you say, what are you worried about? I'm worried about increasing customer share, getting more revenue out of my customers, getting better service scores. You know what? The strongest correlation of customer share is employee commitment and competence. When you have employees that are committed, they will lead to customers who are committed. Don't start just by serving customers as an event. Build a sustainable pattern with your employees. Or a leader says, I'm worried about shareholder value. By the way, that is very legitimate. Getting stock price to go up, if you run a company and you do that, your board of directors will like you, everybody will like you, your children will like you even more because they'll live a better life. And then you say to them, let me tell you the fact, 50% of stock price is financial performance. The other 50% is intangible, reputation of the two firms in the same industry with the same earnings will have a 50% difference in stock price. So if you go after stock price simply by cutting bonuses and cutting salary, you're only going to get halfway there. You got to get that reputation. You see that today. BP, their profits are the same right now, and their stock price is cut in half. Goldman's profits are good. Their stock price got cut in half because they face some of that intangible loss of reputation. Leaders who don't pay attention to that do so at an incredible peril. And so making meaning makes money. This is not just about, in fact, somebody said, oh, I don't like this book. It's a warm, fuzzy HR book, and it's not going to have business in. If that's the way you approach the book, you're not going to get it. You're going to want to go to Woodstock and chant and hug and sing. We are not doing this book of meaning making, and that's why we didn't want to write it just to the individual, to give you a sense of purpose. We say, leaders, your job is to be a meaning maker who makes money. And if it doesn't lead to making money, it's the wrong thing to do. But it will, and we can prove that empirically, and you can prove it pragmatically. which restaurants do we go back to? The ones that give us employees who make us feel good, who make us feel like we're doing a good job. In Rochester, New York, I've heard there's two good restaurants. And you go back to those restaurants, summer, winter, or fall, because they give you a sense of service, a sense of relationships. Why? Because the employees who work there have a sense of meaning in their work. And when
right.
you get that value chain, it's sustainable. And that's where the sustainable organization will likely come from.
Yeah, I read something today or yesterday by one of the great HR folks in our space, John Sumser, and he wrote about he was flying somewhere, flying from point A to point B. He was in the airport, and he had a little time to kill in between flights, and he asked the person there, where can I get something to eat? And she said, okay, walk down the concourse, 200 feet, there's a seafood place down there. And so he walks down there 200 feet, 250 feet, and sitting down to have his seafood. And then there was some kind of change in the flight arrangement. The time was bumped up, and the flight was getting ready to go. And the person at the gate counter just ran down the concourse, found him, tracked him down, brought him back
wow.
to the plane to make sure he got on the plane. Right, that small gesture. Well, why did you do that? And she says, well, I love working here. I'm committed here. There are great people here. This is a great place to work. That's why I do what I did. And that's the kind of thing, obviously, that's going to commit. That commitment reflects in how customers are going to react to the brand and to the service, and absolutely would stay with them. It's a great point.
Dave,
I just want to do a quick announcement, and then we'll get back to the conversation. HR Happy Hour, we have just about 20 minutes to go. The show is flying by tonight, like it usually does. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Shauna, I think Dave is intimidating our guests so far. No one's wanting to chime in and take him on, but there's loads of people on the line, so if any of you guys want to ask
Come
a question
on,
or make a comment, don't be shy. Otherwise, hang out with us, with Dave, and we're talking about the why of work and understanding how meaning and abundance, how it can be created, how leaders can manage to it, and how it sort of can drive organizational success. So
maybe everyone just wants to keep listening.
Yeah, I did. All right, Dave, I did guilt someone into asking a question. So let's
Yay!
Go ahead and take a call. Now that I did that, we have to take the call. Let's go ahead and take our first caller. Area code 646, you are on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, this is Victoria.
Hi, Victoria.
Hey, Victoria.
How's it going?
Great.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good.
Hi, great show, by the way. Thanks for coming on. I will definitely check out your book. But the question I have is, you talk about meaning and how it profits the business, but leaders need to be able to communicate and empower people with the meaning of their organizations. So what can business schools do to teach meaning and money?
I remember when I first started teaching at the University of Michigan, somebody came up to a professor and said, do you teach a course in business ethics? And the professor jokingly said, which one? And by the way, that is a joke. It's supposed to be a joke. One of the strategies business schools did is they'd say, let's take ethics and make it a separate course. So you teach finance, marketing, strategy, and then you have a course in ethics. The trend today is to not do that, to say every topic has an ethics overtone. Finance obviously has ethical overtones around some of the issues Goldman has faced and others. Marketing has incredible ethics overtones around advertising and sales strategies. Human resources has overtones of ethics with compensation and salaries and careers and candor. And so what we've done in business schools is begin to weave the principles of ethics into everything we do. I think meaning would go the same way. Meaning is not just found in a human resource course for those folks in the business school who don't like numbers. Meaning is found, I think, in every course in the business school. How do you imbue a product in marketing that gives people's brand a sense of meaning and purpose? When you see the Nike swoosh, they're not selling a logo, they're selling a lifestyle. And how do you get meaning into what you do with that? In the technology space, Apple has found success because I was with someone today that was showing me the iPad, and they were so excited. Let me show you the coolest thing I've got. It's an iPad. Well, the design that they've done with that technological space has created a sense of meaning that goes beyond simply the elegance of the technology. And so I think embedding meaning in almost everything we do becomes important. And that's where I would probably try to head conceptually. I'd love to try to get more specific if I can. Thanks.
Victoria, thank you so much.
Yeah.
No problem. My pleasure.
Oh, we got a question from Susan Burns.
All right. Go ahead, Shauna.
So, sorry, this is on Twitter. She wants to know, are leadership styles evolving to support collaborative work environments as connection to creating meaning?
Are leadership styles changing to collaborative work environments? Let me tell you an answer to that that I often use when I see somebody going through change. 20-60-20. 20% of leaders have this intuitive predisposition to make meaning happen, and their styles don't need to evolve because they got it.
Right, it's inherent in how they manage and how they behave already, right?
Already there. 20% have got it. I don't think I'd need to take Steve through a meaning-making course. You got it. It's part of your identity. It's who you are.
Absolutely.
20% are never going to get it, and that may not be 20, but there's some percent. You can do all the coaching, training, cajoling, and love you ever wanted to do, and they're never going to get it. I think working both of those extremes is dangerous. By the way, for those who've been in HR for a while, I get so frustrated because I see articles every year or two. I hate HR. I have data. HR is terrible. What they're looking at is the bottom 20%. And you know what? I can go find you 20% of HR people who are just atrocious. I could also do the same in finance, marketing, strategy, and everywhere I go. And I don't think you want to focus on either ones. That's the other danger. I get guilty of going to the top 20% and saying, look how great it is. Where we need to focus, to the great question that you had, is on the middle 60%. How do we help well-intentioned, dedicated, good leaders and good people move to the right, move to the more positive, affirming ways? And that's where the coaching, the training, the books, if it's our book or someone else, and I got to tell you right now, almost every week, every couple of weeks, I see other books coming out, Happiness at Work, books coming out that are saying there seems to be a movement. The Apprentice changed its show from the traditional Apprentice to the Celebrity Apprentice, where the winner now donates money.
Right.
So even this show that was built on avarice and greed is starting to change to say people – more than that in their entertainment.
Right.
And I think we're starting to see that this is a movement for that middle 60%. 20% will never get it. The guy who interviewed me and said, you know, how can I use your insights to cut the bonuses of my people so that I make more money?
Let's trick them into being happy, therefore we can pay them less and they won't notice, right? That was sort of
That's exactly right. How do I trick them so that I can go buy a bigger boat?
Right.
And the answer is you know, I hope your boat sinks. I mean, it's just, you're not going to be a sustainable leader because people aren't that gullible and they're not that naive. And there are some folks who still believe that. And so to your question, it's the middle 60% that we want to move.
Yeah.
And I think helping them see that moving to more meaning-making is going to help them reach their goals. It's going to help them become better leaders. It's going to help them get more committed employees. It's going to help them get more customer connection, more financial results. And when making meaning helps them with their goals, the why of work is accomplished. And again, that's what we wrote the book to try to figure out how to do that. I think right now it's going to be a movement. I just, Marshall Goldsmith's book, Daniel Pink's book, Rosabeth Kanter's book, Linda Gratton's book. I just think there's a lot of stuff coming out that people who are pretty thoughtful are poking around in this area, and I think it's gonna catch on.
Yeah, Dave, I think you're right. I think the Wall Street movie you've mentioned a couple times, right? The sequel came out and it bombed, didn't it? Did anybody go see that movie? No one cared about it, right?
There was a sequel.
No one even heard about it.
I didn't even know.
That's great. I'm gonna look that up. Thank you.
Let's take a couple more calls. We are gonna run short of time, but let's grab a couple more folks who want to get on board. Let's go to line number 3, it looks like. Area code 864, you're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, Steve. Sean, it's Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
How are you all
Dave,
doing? And Dave?
This is our Daniel Pink friend here. So.
Well, yeah.
I love Dan Pink. You be nice, Paul.
I've got nothing against Dan Pink. He's a nice guy. He wouldn't come on my show, but no, Dave, and I wanted to ask you this because I think with your book and your background, you could probably give me anyway kind of some insight, because one of the things that was driving me crazy when Dan Pink's book first came out was I was getting a lot of feedback from companies, clients, and people saying, okay, we can eliminate our rewards program because they don't want, that's not working. And I took the position that the meaning of your job and your company is important. It's a foundational element, but you can't just eliminate rewards, incentives, commissions in the scheme of things, because those two are ways to guide behavior within an organization. What is your feeling when it comes to the whole incentive and reward space?
If I was next to you, we'd do what's called spit and slap. That's a high.
Uh-oh.
I remember.
Okay.
So, let's be clear. Money does make a difference. Not only economically, you need money to survive and buy the house and the car and the braces, but it's also a symbolic message of what matters and what's valuable in the world we live in. You can't walk away from that. Deming, the quality guy,
right,
had 11 or 12 points, and one of them is do away with appraisals and rewards. You know what? Maybe some Nirvana island where we're not in a survivor mode, which is also the win-lose game, where utopia exists, you can do it. I think you need a compensation system that acknowledges it. Now, my view is the reward system reinforces behavior change. It doesn't cause it. Because what happens is if you get people to behave for meaning and purpose and then use the incentives in a subtle and wise way to reinforce it, then the change in behavior is going to come. If you try to drive the behavior simply by the money, you may get a short-term event but not a long-term commitment. And so I like to think of compensation systems as the reinforcer of a set of directions that you've got, not as the initiator.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that's perfect. And I'm also thinking, Dave, from a lot of different angles, not just compensation, because I do think, as some of the other people have even proven, that money, when given too much of to any one person, will cause a behavior you don't want. I mean, Wall Street's a perfect example of that. If somebody gives me a bonus of $1 billion, my kids better watch out, because they may be living somewhere else. Because money does motivate.
And the other research that's fun is when you do something out of a sense of self and purpose and somebody starts to pay you for it, at times that may take away the intrinsic value, and that you may then get driven. This is a guy named Deci, D-E-C-I. You may then begin to get driven by the economic, not the intrinsic value, and it becomes short-term, not sustainable. Again, having said all that, money can be a great motivator. I remember a quick anecdote, and we're going to run out of time, but
go ahead.
I'll be real quick. There was a firm that did leverage buyouts, one of those big private equity firms. You know the name if I said it. And I was sitting home, and I got a call, and they said, we've just done one of the largest leverage buyouts in history, and we'd like to hire a head of HR, and we'll pay you $1 million a year base salary plus bonus. And I said, $1 million a year base salary. My wife looked at me and she yelled, take it. and then the next line was, and what your job would be is get on a plane day one, go into one of the plants, fire 30% of the people, and then in a month go to the next one and fire another 30%. 2 years later, get off the plane and you're rich. And I thought, are you nuts?
Yeah,
and there would still be that 20%. Remember the 20-60-20. 20% would say, I'm gone. I'm there. For my $2 million plus the bonus after 2 years, I'll buy guard dogs and high walls and I'll be safe. I don't want to live that life. I want to have a life where I have relationships and I have purpose and I have other things that drive me. And money can be a motivator, but it's not going to be the only one.
Agreed.
Paul, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for taking our little good-natured joke a little earlier. Paul's a great Dave. Paul's a great, great incentives and rewards guy, the expert, our go-to guy on the show for everything related to influence and incentives and rewards. So, Paul, thanks so much.
No problem.
We are just about winding down, Dave. I'm sorry, we are not going to get to cover all the different questions probably, but of the 7 questions that make up the framework of the book, The Why of Work. But quick reset, we're with Dave Ulrich, his latest book, The Why of Work, How Great Leaders Build Abundant Organizations That Win. I highly recommend it. It's available, you know, anywhere that sells, you know, fine books, right, where you would go and hang out and online and every other place. So we're wrapping it down. We have one more person who wants to get on board. Sean, I think we can squeeze in one last call before we
have to wrap it up
and go for it. Hi, area code 626. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, gang. It's Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Hey there. So, Dave, been a fan of yours for a really long time. I'm just curious, going back to the things that people are motivated by, you mentioned insight, achievement, relationships, empowerment. Do you think those are mutually exclusive, or can you appeal to multiple motivations, you know, simultaneously, so you can get a good variety of folks who are motivated by different things at different points in time?
It's the latter. And the different points in time may be over a lifestyle. When we were younger, achievement, making money was more important. We've now become older and our kids are gone and we've shifted maybe more to empowerment or affiliation. So I think you'll see that ebb and flow over a life cycle. I think you'll see that ebb and flow over the particular circumstances you're in. So
mm-hmm.
I think that does change. And I think getting sensitive to that is a very important thing that leaders need to be able to do. For example, one of the old games was, we have a job for you at corporate. If you take it, you'll make it and you'll be promoted and you'll be successful. If you turn it down, you're done forever. Well, in some people I've worked with, they have a dual career family. They have children in high school. This isn't the right time for them to move. And to say you must take it or your career is over is just plain stupid. And I think most companies are getting through that knothole and starting to say, there's a time and a place, and let's find what motivates you at this time and at this place and build the organization around it.
Yep, I would agree with that. I think that's absolutely right on. And that's what I see play out in a lot of organizations that we work with.
Yeah, it's so true. I'm sorry,
go ahead. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Finish your thought on that, and we'll make a couple of final announcements and wrap up. I can't believe the show's just about wound down already. But
wow,
I'm set. Go ahead and wind her down.
Okay, Suzanne, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it, as well as Paul and Victoria earlier on. A couple minutes left. Again, the book's called The Why of Work, How Great Leaders Build Abundant Organizations That Win by Dave Ulrich and Wendy Ulrich. I've been talking to Dave tonight a lot about the book. We probably did not get into as much detail as we would have liked, sadly, but that's okay. You know, we can circle back and maybe do a follow-up show with some of the folks who get involved to read the book, and maybe we'll do like a HR Happy Hour book club, Shauna. That's something we haven't done yet.
Hey, that's a great idea.
We make all our listeners read the same book, and we could talk about it sometime. That would
work
well. And so we'll have to
the other option. Yes. Have Wendy on, my co-author. She's much smarter than I am.
I did. You know, you know, when I was working on booking the show and working with the public relations firm, I made a request. Could either of you come on the show? And the PR person came back, well, Wendy can't make it, but Dave's available. What do you think? And I said, sure, we'll take Dave. maybe the next time we'll have Wendy on board. That would be fantastic.
That would be cool.
Dave, in addition to the book, which we've talked about a lot and we've mentioned and just highly recommend, is there anything else you'd like to just mention, places you'll be going, or events, speeches,
no,
anything you'd like to
mention? I do a lot of speeches. I'm on the road. it's a joke. I saw the movie Up in the Air, the guy that got 10 million air miles, and Delta and Northwest merged, and they didn't give you the total program miles. And so I called, and they said, geez, you have 13 million miles. So a lot of traveling,
oh
a lot of speeches.
God.
I said, watch this movie. You'll see me in it. Then I realized what the guy did, and I said, don't watch this movie. That's not
what
I do.
Well, when you told the story about the leveraged buyout and the offer you made, that's obviously what I'm sure everybody who was listening thought about was that movie and that role.
Right.
It sounded very similar, right? At least
that's great. Our sense is this area of making meaning at work is not just unique to us. It's coming. And it's a shift in talent from a war for talent where you have winners and losers to a Marshall Plan where many people win. In leadership, it's not leadership about a set of motions, but also the emotion and passion that goes with it. And for individuals, it's how do you help ground yourself in what provides meaning for you and then structure a job that makes it work for you. We hope that people will look not just at our work, but at other work, that will change organizations. And people have said, Dave and Wendy, why'd you write this book? We have a granddaughter named Maren, M-A-R-E-N. Mm-hmm. Someday she'll work in a company that we hope somebody who's listening on the phone has structured. And we hope they have built a company where she'll work hard, be productive, make money, all the things that are necessary to survive. But to really sustain the organization, that she or others, other parents, grandchildren, will have an organization that gives them a sense of purpose. Boy, that's a hope, and it's an ambitious one. We talk about building the abundant organization, meaning for oneself, value for others, and hope for humanity. And that's what we're writing about.
Dave, thanks so much. We're about to cut off. Thank you so much, everybody, on the HR Happy Hour. We'll have to say goodnight, and we'll see you next time.
Night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HR Happy Hour, sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions and enthusiastic proponent of free stuff. Go to aquire.com/downloads for free software trials, free webinars, free podcasts, free case studies, and more. Did we mention it's all free? Acquire.com/downloads. Who doesn't like freebies?
All right. Thanks, everyone. Hey, Dave, if you're still with us, thank you so much. The show's over. We're still we're not on the live stream anymore, but this bit after does make the recorded archive for later listening. So
after show time.
Great job. Thank you both.
Thank you so much, Dave. We really appreciate it, and thanks for taking the time tonight. And please let us know if there's anything we can do.
Scramble. Thanks.
Oh, appreciate it very much. Thanks so much.
Yep. Bye.
All right. Have a great night. Good night. Shauna, great job tonight. Thanks.
Thanks.
I did open up all the lines who was left hanging out online. If anybody's hanging out, you can say hi if you'd like. We'll hang out for a minute or two.
Right.
I'm still here.
Great.
Hi.
That was fun.
That was great, Steve. That was great.
I'll tell you what. I had about 8 more questions. You just never got to them. You know, I mean,
There's
just no way. There was too much. But it's good. Boy, what a smart guy. Oh, my God. Very impressive.
Yeah. No, he's good. I'm glad you got him on there. That was interesting.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get a chance to tell. I'll send him an email afterwards, and the key message will be, like, tell all your other friends that they need to come on. Right?
Mm-hmm. They totally have to.
A lot of the names he was dropping on the show, we got to get some, you know. We did book, do you guys know Andrew McAfee? Have you heard of him?
Yeah.
What'd he write?
Enterprise 2.0 is his big book.
Was that a few years ago?
No,
it was like a year ago.
Maybe
a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Yeah, we've booked him. He's coming on in July, so that'll be a good
show.
That'll
be so cool.
Very cool. I hope you can get Pink. He did get on. A friend of mine got him on his show, but when I called, they bagged me.
Oh no. We'll have to try. Seriously, like one of my very first posts back when I started blogging, I talked about his career advice book that was the manga, and he actually commented. And I was like, oh, my God, that's so freaking cool. So I've loved him ever since.
Yeah, so we're doing it. Although next week we got to follow up Dave Ulrich and all that great insight with, you know, me and a couple of guys from England talking about the World Cup. You know, going to be a different vibe, I think. But,
it's the diversity, Steve, that keeps the audience coming back.
Exactly right. Not every Seinfeld episode was a home run, right?
Absolutely.
Some of them were just average.
Okay, in my opinion, no Seinfeld episode was a home run.
Right, there you go. Yeah, so it was fun, though. Definitely fun tonight. And boy, he was, even before the show, like as Sean and I were chatting with Dave, I mean, such a good-natured guy, really interested.
Yeah.
He asked us a lot of questions about the show and
interested
in what it was all about.
Well, you're getting quite a following, you guys.
All right. Well, great. Well, super, guys. I guess that's it then, right? Next week we'll do the World Cup of HR and hopefully have a nice blend of World Cup talk and organizational, the relation to, you know, how organizations can leverage the World Cup, you know, have some watching parties and let people come in late the next day kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, that's going to go over well. That's about how people or how companies feel about March Madness.
Yeah, it's exactly
right.
Yeah, but I'm guessing
deal,
Bill
right?
Borman will come in late.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to have Felix Wetzel come on, and Felix works for a company called JobSite in the U.K., and they're sort of, you know, the big online job board from the U.K. Like, they're the big one.
Mm-hmm.
And job site sponsors one of the English Premier League teams. They're the shirt sponsor for them. So he's got a lot of interesting insight about the relationship between sports and organization and marketing to some extent as well. So he's going to come on, and we'll talk a little bit about that and other things as well. He's a German guy living in the UK, but a real smart guy, and so he'll be on too. So, and then after that, the week after that, I'm going to be in Gettysburg at the Leadership Development Experience for 3 days, and we'll be doing the show live from Gettysburg on Thursday night.
So much fun.
Sure. Yeah, we're still kicking around different guests. We're trying to book. Paul, did you ever read or see the movie The Killer Angels? Are familiar with it?
The only way I'm familiar with it is because Trish McFarlane just tweeted something about it.
Okay. Yeah, it was like the movie, they made this movie Gettysburg a few years ago, and it was based on a book called The Killer Angels, and we're trying to get, the author of the book is actually dead, but his son has also written a number of books about Gettysburg, and the book was written in the 70s, so the guy was pretty old, but his son has written a number of other books about Gettysburg, Gods and Generals, and a couple of other ones. So we're trying to
book. I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard of Gods.
Yeah,
and
we're trying to book that show, and we're getting a little bit of a runaround from Random House, but we're still working on it. And so I'm trying to think what we've got coming up after that. Oh, lots of fun stuff, and including Andrew McAfee in July, and
cool
other things as well. So great. All right, super guys. Well, Suzanne, thanks so much if you're still around. Paul, thank you. Victoria, if you're still there, thank you. And everyone else who listened tonight, Acquire Software, thanks so much.
Thank
you, Acquire. Apologize for not getting the outro completely started at time. That last answer from Dave ran us a little long, but we'll get it together for the next time. And,
yeah, we're working on it.
Yeah, thanks so much, everyone, and good night from the HR Happy Hour.
See you guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.